Moncrief on News Talk.
As you may know, excavation work will start next Monday at the Tuam Mother and Baby Home, where it is believed the remains of hundreds of children are buried. This week, members of the Tuam Babies Families Group are visiting the site. Among them, the woman whose case first brought this scandal to national attention, Anna Corrigan. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean. How are you? Thank you for having me on.
Just to remind people, like, where this all started, when did you find out that you had two brothers you'd never known about?
I found out in 2012, and it was kind of more or less by accident, because my father had been in the industrial home and his two siblings, and I went to Bernardo's Tracing to get some information about them. And then I said to the lady there, I had some recollection of my mother and her brother having some kind of an argument. And her brother said to me, I was only very young, your mother had two children. And my mother said, you go out and play. Well, I forgot all about it. I was an only child. I was only about five. And I said, well, I don't know if it was a dream or did I really want brothers or did I want someone to mind me? I don't know. But anyway, what happened was then she said to me, give me your mother's name and I'll do some searching. So she got back to me in Christmas 2012 and she said, I have some information for you, Anna. And she said, I'll tell you in January. I said, please tell me now. And she told me, she said, yes, your mother gave birth to two boys in the Tuam Mother and Baby Home.
My word. And then you continue digging by yourself then?
Yes, I started digging then. I got a big shovel and... I said to her, actually, I'm not being facetious, but I said to her, when I get something between my teeth, I'm like a dog with a bone, and I don't let go. But I had no idea what I was walking into, no idea whatsoever.
Yeah. And there is some documentation in relation to John and William, but it seems from what you've discovered that it's very inconsistent. It doesn't paint a clear picture at all as to what happened to them.
No, well, John was born in 1946. And I got his birth cert, and I also got a page in the ledger, and it said he was almost 9 pounds in weight, normal and healthy. So then, further digging, I got the inspection report on the home for 1947. And the reason I got it is because John is listed, all the other children are redacted. And it said that on it, John was emaciated with a voracious appetite, no control over bodily functions. Now, my mother had left the home a month before that because women could only stay for a year. And obviously, there was nowhere to take her child. And she was sending back 5 shillings a month for the upkeep of John. And they were also being paid by the local county council. And emaciated means to me, you're starving. And a voracious appetite means you're not being fed. So then John died like 4 or 5 months later of the measles. And they wrote on his deathbed that he was a congenital idiot. Then my brother William was born in 1950, and he was born in the Galway Hospital. There was some complications, and my mother was obviously moved from the Tuam home. And I couldn't get any paperwork from the Galway Hospital about his birth. And then he came back to the home, and I was told that he died in 1951 at 9 months old, and he has no medical certification of death. He has no death certificate and he has no reason for death. So the only reason I have to believe that he's dead is that some nun wrote it in a ledger, he's dead, and she changed his date of birth on the piece of paper.
So you don't know. Yeah. So, it's certainly far from clear if William is alive or not. Or whether.
Well, after this story broke... you know, families, they don't say very much, but some gossip then started and it came back to me that my mother had said, she told somebody she had one child. And I found along the way that even women that have 4 and 5 children, they only ever admit to one. It's the shame and it's the fear and they've been told that they've done something terrible, but that she had a child and that he was sent to America and she had moved to Dublin when she married my father. And she wasn't leaving her home in case her son came back to find her.
Yeah. So today then, after all, you know, after that shocking discovery at the start and all the investigation you did and the picture you have built up, now that you're back there and I as I understand, there's porta cabins and diggers ready to go in there, how must that feel to you and the other women who were there?
Well, the thing about it is I don't think there's very many women left now at this stage because the home closed in 61. I knew of two women, that's all I knew of, that had survived the home. And one passed a couple of months back, Lord rest her soul, Rosie. And there's still one lady alive. But the family members, I mean, they're totally distraught. I mean, we have family members who live in the UK and the United States. And they can't make it over today because it's too exorbitant, the price. And they just can't. So they've given me permission to speak on their behalf. But we do have one case. I've sent it over there to a lady, sent over a victim impact statement from America. And she was born in the home herself. And she said what happened to herself. And her mother was absolutely scandalous. And she also has a sister in the grave. So you can maybe have a read of that, and that will give you a better picture of, you know, how people are feeling.
And I assume you're referring to Margaret Byrne. And she says
Margaret Byrne.
Yeah, she says she wasn't informed in advance that the excavation was going to take place. Were you told in advance?
Yeah, but she wasn't informed. It's very difficult to keep communication. She's in our group, right? She knew. That's just kind of, I'd say, a mix up of words. It's more the family day. There's been no supports. If you read on, there was no supports put in place for people to come over. There was no, you know, no. You'll see it further down. I mean, it's a hard call to come from Canada in the high seasons to the west of Ireland and try and find accommodation and get flights. And, you know, it's one thing to know. And they haven't broke ground yet. So, but she's very badly impacted by it.
Yeah, I imagine so. And what's going to be happening today?
Well, today at the Airdrie Hotel, they're sending down a bus. Now, the media were told not to come today, but we from the Chum Babies family group, we invited the media today. So I had words with Daniel, and he said some people didn't want to speak to the press. I said, that's fine. So we've come to an agreement that we're going from the Airdrie Hotel up to the site. We're going to have a look at the site and people can have a private moment there. There's some people already have arrived, local people. And then at 3 o'clock then, myself, because I have permission to speak for the members of the group, we have a combined 14 family members in the pit. And I'll be speaking on their behalf. And there's also another lady who's come over from England, Annette McKay. Her sister was born in the home in Chum and died in the home in Chum. And we also now have just met, there's people still coming, a man who was born there in 1952, and only recently he's come out in public to speak about his history. So things are uncovering, and hopefully as things go forward, more and more people will find their voice and find that they've done nothing wrong and there's no shame in their lives. And for what they were told for their whole life and the hardship they went through, they'd done nothing wrong. They were innocent children, treated drastically by this state, who promised under the 1916 proclamation that all the children in the state would be treated equally and all its citizens. And here we end up with what happened to thousands, hundreds of thousands of our citizens, not alone with the mother and baby home, with the industrial homes, the Magdalen homes and county homes and mental homes, you name it.
Yeah. Have they told you how long they think the excavation might go on for?
Well, they said it may take 2 years, but there's still a lot of problems around this because we're going to fall into problems with DNA because there's only a limited amount of relatives have been, close relatives are allowed to give DNA. And I don't think there's any legal restriction on any family member. I believe myself personally, I have to check with my solicitor that, like, if you had a great aunt Mary and you loved her implicitly and she died and you found out that she had a son or a daughter in Chum and you wanted to right a wrong for your aunt Mary, I don't see why you shouldn't be able to come along and give your DNA and decide that, you know, be able to go to your Aunt Mary's and tool on her headstone that, you know, when if he is found that, you know, predeceased by her beautiful son, John, you know. So. Mm. And I do think DNA should be allowed to be taken from everyone. There's also issues of, we've had problems before about the type of DNA that's been used because we've been liaising with some professors out in UCD. Forensic Science Ireland will be doing the DNA, so there may be issues around that. And also how long they're going to keep the DNA. So there's problems going to arise along the way. But for today, it's a small light at the end of a tunnel. And I think Tuam is only the tip of the iceberg. 9,000 children were recorded as dying. Mm. The 14 homes by the commission. And I think each and every one of those were sentient beings. They got no dignity in life and no dignity in death. And if at the very least we can take them out of that septic tank.
Yeah.
And identify them and hear them and acknowledge them and move them to maybe the graveyard across the road and say a final farewell. But the one thing we need to know is that they are there, because there is a lot of evidence out there that death certs were falsified,
yeah.
Broker adoptions. So there's still more questions than answers.
And as you say, it's going to be extremely complex, and the sorting through DNA is going to be very difficult. Anna, are you prepared for the possibility that you may never learn what happened to John and William?
Well, the way I look at it, I do it in phases. When this is over, and when the answers and the number of children and who have been identified, well, then we'll go to stage three, because we may have to go to the European Court of Human Rights. Under Article 8, there's lots of avenues available to us, but that's for further down the line. Today, I'm just looking, the ground is going to be broken on the 14th of July, and hope and pray that we get the answers we want and that the children are heard, because they've been crying for a long time, and that we find them all. And if not, then we'll have to go back and see where we go from there. But my two cases, personally, and my brothers, they're not with the commission. They're with the Gardaí since 2013 and 2014 in Tuam. I'm dealing with the police, not through the commission. I was in a home.
Mm. Because they're listed as missing persons.
One is listed as a missing person. I made a formal statement and it was accepted by my local police station and it was sent to Tuam. That was in 2013. And in 2014, I made another complaint that my brother died, not of the measles, of neglect and malnutrition, based on the paperwork that I have. And that was also taken as a formal statement and sent to him in 2014.
Okay. Anna, yeah, you take care of yourself. Thank you so much for speaking with us today. Anna Corrigan, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for giving us the chance to have our voice. Thank you so much.
No problem at all. It's no more than you deserve. Anna, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Just a few comments on the back of that. One texter says, that lady is right. Tuam is only the tip of the iceberg. The way the church and the state have tried the women of Ireland is shameful. These are innocent mothers and their babies. I hope that all the heartache those relatives go through will be worth it. Someone else says, and you make an extremely accurate point, we have to thank Catherine Corliss for all that is being done to try and right the wrongs of the past. These babies deserve a proper burial and graves for family to visit. And someone else makes a similar point. We owe so much to all the families who fought for justice to get this far. I cannot imagine how difficult it must be for them.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.